You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
News and commentary on a great day for you. Here we are, May 27, 2021. The Senate, I want you to be aware of this, the Senate unanimously passed a bill proposed by Senators Josh Hawley, Republican, Missouri, Mike Braun, Republican, Indiana, and it requires that President Joe Biden declassify intel related to any potential links between the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. As Hawley said on the Senate floor, the American people deserve to know about the origins of COVID-19. They deserve to know how this terrible pandemic has ravaged the globe and our country, how it got started, and what is China's role in starting it. We're going to be spending more time on that issue in the next segment coming up after news and commentary. In the meantime, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, out just unhinged over a Senate-approved amendment that would lower tariffs on Chinese products in a bill meant to help improve American competitiveness against China. Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer had sponsored the legislation, saying they're really trying to make us more competitive against China. So it's going to remove tariffs on various things. And Rubio is basically saying his statement, it is critical that our legislative effort to compete with China doesn't inadvertently end up benefiting the Chinese Communist Party. He said, unfortunately, like far too many components of this package, this amendment fails to meet that bar. And of course, since we blame China for COVID, we're still looking for a way to reward them. So today, Biden released through the White House his official 666, just 1 6, but it's still enough, $6 trillion budget proposal for the next year. It's the first of his presidency. Tallies up the administration's 8-year, $2.3 trillion American jobs plan, the $1.8 trillion American families plan, and putting them into Biden's $1.5 trillion request for annual operating expenditures. How's he going to pay for it? Well, as I've cited before, they're going to push hard on corporations. They're going to take their tax rate from 21% to 28%. Many of those corporations came back and relocated businesses in the states when Trump lowered the tax rate for them. Now, what do you think they're going to do from here? And in fact, that rate for those corporations would be higher than they might pay in China. This should be no surprise to you. The Commerce Department saying a key measure of inflation shows inflation is accelerating faster than expected. No kidding. You don't have to be an economic expert to see that coming, did you? Now, you saw a great report yesterday that consumer spending is up. A big boom in that, probably the highest since the 50s, as we come out of COVID and money's available and people are moving about, buying and shopping. But at the same time, the prices stand back. We don't know how big they're going to get. Senate Republicans were able to stop a bipartisan January 6th commission to investigate the Capitol attack. They needed 60 votes to overcome the GOP filibuster. There were Republicans joining the Democrats, 6 of them. You probably know them, could guess them. Collins of Maine, Murkowski, Alaska, Romney, Utah, Cassidy, Louisiana, Sasson, Nebraska, Portman of Ohio. See if they pay the next election. President, by the way, if we were going to do an investigation, a commission, why the hell are we not investigating President Biden and the Hunter connections on that laptop. There's more evidence presented on that laptop, as reported by the New York Post yesterday, than any of the so-called Russian collusion allegations against Trump. I want to see that investigation. What's the chance of it? Slim to none. Biden saying 62% of U.S. adults have received at least one dose of a vaccine. And the Centers for Disease Control doing another about-face, changing their rules at summer camp. Now they're saying it's safe to return to full capacity without masking. And the bottom of the story reads, this is a developing story. Continue to check back for updates. No kidding. And your YouTube apparently blocking a news clip of a mother in Georgia objecting to mask mandates for children. She said, you gotta stop it. My 5, 6, 7-year-old can't breathe. And YouTube blocks it.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, priced $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing. Covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
This was originally called the Wuhan virus or the Chinese virus. That's what it is. And I think that it's a sad story that for over a year, the Western world was basically lied to by China and accepted it. And people who said, hey, this is a laboratory, they were ridiculed. And I think now you're beginning to find out that the weight of evidence is overwhelming, because technically a disease which comes from an animal into a human evolves at a much slower rate. This is a very rapid, I think deliberately engineered disease, probably escaped because of clumsiness or sloppiness, probably not a deliberate effort. But nonetheless, China is responsible for the death of millions.
That is former GOP House Speaker Newt Gingrich. He's even allowing that it was an accident that it got out of the lab. That's being gracious. I'm not so sure it was an accident it got out. And, of course, when it got out, we were being given lies. The Wuhan Institute, through the Chinese Communist Party, was telling the World Health Organization, which then echoed to the rest of the world, we had 3 scientists in late 2019, come down with flu-like symptoms. No, they didn't tell us that then. No. In fact, that just recently got learned. And when they were questioned about it, they said they all had the flu. They just all happened to have the flu. I'd ask in the beginning monologue today, are you surprised at all that now that Trump is no longer president, the media suddenly thinks this lab leak theory is certainly plausible. Yes, it could have happened. It could have come from the Wuhan lab. It could be called the Wuhan virus, the China virus, as Trump would say, and always be mocked. They are now 180 degrees from what they were doing to Trump at that point. And Tim Murtaugh, a writer for the Daily Signal, had the same idea. He said, for nearly a year, almost every major news outlet declared it was a debunked fringe conspiracy theory to even discuss the idea that the coronavirus pandemic began as a leak from a lab in Wuhan, China. It so happened that Trump was the most visible person pressing the case of the lab leak theory, which meant the media felt compelled to push back extra hard. And now, a year later, the very same news organizations are allowing that the lab leak hypothesis is indeed plausible. So what changed? He raises that question. You know what the answer is too, right? Practically, he writes, practically and factually, the only real difference today versus a year ago, Trump is no longer in the White House. He goes on to talk about how CNN's Chris Cillis, whatever his name is, questioned and tweeted at one point, I should say, journalists should not choose sides. And yet at the same time, he had a piece stating, Anthony Fauci just crushed Donald Trump's theory on the origins of the coronavirus. And he also wrote a May 5th piece, Fauci's views on the origins of the disease matters a whole lot more than Trump's opinion about where it came from. And he quoted Fauci from a National Geographic review, which Fauci threw cold water on the lab leak theory and endorsed the belief the virus evolved in nature and then jumped to humans. Of course, Fauci has also now changed his mind. I want to take you back to the other day when he was in front of Senator Kennedy being questioned about what his acts were in dealing with his agency and sending the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease, sending money to be used at the Wuhan lab. Now, it went into one little corporation and then another. I'm not saying they're trying to conceal it, but they didn't really know where the money was going, although Fauci wanted to believe it. And Kennedy, well, Senator Kennedy of Louisiana has a very good way of sharpening a knife and cutting out what he wants. Listen.
Dr. Fauci, I believe you have testified that you didn't give any money to the Wuhan lab to conduct gain-of-function research. Is that right?
That is correct.
How do you know they didn't lie to you?
Excuse me, sir?
How do you know they didn't lie to you and use the money for gain-of-function research anyway?
Well, we've seen the results of the experiments that were done and that were published and that the viruses that they studied are on public databases now. So none of that was gain of function. So
how do you know they didn't do the research and not put it on their website?
There's no way of guaranteeing that.
Of course not. Of course not. I'm going to come back to that point in a moment. But as I mentioned in news and commentary at the top of this hour, Senators Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, Mike Braun, Republican of Indiana, got a bill through the Senate, passed unanimously, proposed by them, that requires President Joe Biden to declassify any intel related to any potential leaks between the Wuhan Institute and the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. Good. But there's so many other things in play. The Biden administration just the other day closed the U.S. State Department's investigations into the COVID-19 pandemic. And they were saying, well, there's nothing else to be found. We're done. That investigation started under Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo. Well, now they've decided we're done. But when they're pressed on it now, they say, well, that part is concluded, but we're still very interested. And, of course, they point to Joe Biden has also told the intel agencies, get out there and find everything you can in the next 90 days. Well, again, Senator Josh Hawley and Mike Braun and the members of the Senate that voted for it want to know whatever you find, declassify what you got and what you get so the American public can see it. Because Fauci was, quote, trusting China. Dr. Fake was believing blindly they were good guys.
They're very competent, trustworthy scientists. I'm not talking about anything else in China. I'm talking about the scientists that you would expect that they would abide by the conditions of the grant, which they've done for the years that we've had interactions.
So you don't think the Chinese would lie to you?
Well, when you say the Chinese are a rather broad group. I know the scientists that we've dealt with have been trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. You think all the scientists have told the truth in terms of the origin of the Wuhan virus and not been influenced by the Communist Party of China, do you?
I don't have enough insight into the Communist Party in China to know the interactions right. between them and the scientists, sir.
Yeah, but come on. You'd have to be a fool to think that those scientists are able to do whatever they choose to do without approval, permission, or a sign-off by Chinese Communist Party. And then there's this. There's a paper from 2012. Now, Dr. Fauci, told Senator Kennedy, we didn't send any money to be used for gain of function. And you heard Senator Kennedy said, well, how do you know they didn't? Well, they've always been reputable. Has anyone ever lied to you? Well, I wouldn't know. I mean, and of course, gain of function, the whole idea is weaponizing a virus to find out how it can be used in another fashion, especially as a biological weapon. If that's what China was working on and it accidentally got out, well, you look and see what happened across the world. 600,000 Americans dead. The economy wrecked. And now we're trying to get back on track, and not just for us, but around the world. And the millions that died around the world. And Fauci saying, we didn't send any money, and there's nothing in the grant that said it would be for gain of function, but he has to admit, we don't know if they used that or did it anyway. But Dr. Fauci believes in gain of function research. There's a paper from 2012. He defended gain of function research, saying the benefits gained from science would outweigh the risk of an accidental pandemic breaking out. May I read that again for you? The benefits gained from science, learning about gain of function, outweigh the risk of an accidental pandemic breaking out. The paper reads, it's more likely that a pandemic would occur in nature, and the need to stay ahead of such a threat is a primary reason for performing an experiment that might appear to be risky. He's been asked, what about this 2012 report where you acknowledged all of this and that the scientific community, you said, need to have some real investigations into gain of function? And if there's an accident, the benefits would be greater than the accident. You want to tell that to all those who died? Stephen O'Brien, in a piece for the Asian Times, questions, was the U.S. complicit in China's COVID research and specifically referenced gain of function? And he points out, and we've discussed this previously, the U.S. lab in 2019 temporarily closed some labs inside our nation. The U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland, got closed over safety issues. Apparently there were two breaches at that location, according to the CDC. That is an area where they do biosafety level 3 and 4 labs. Level 4 in the theory, the most secure lab known today. The Wuhan lab supposedly a level 4. And also we had similar activities going on in Canada. The U.S. and Canada is all part of the North American Defense Sharing Agreement, shared classified information. And whatever they were sharing obviously ended up going to China as well. And the intel community had to know a lot of that. Again, Stephen Bryan in the Asian Times points out the CIA and other senior American officials, including James Clapper, the former director of National Intel, insisted COVID-19 did not come from the Wuhan lab, but it was animal to jumping to human. Remember that? The CIA at that time, head of the intel, said, nope, didn't happen that way. No accident. China didn't do it on purpose. Again, back to the position and comments of former GOP House Speaker Newt Gingrich.
Common sense is this was a manufactured virus. It almost certainly came out of Wuhan. The burden ought to be on China. The Chinese have lied to the World Health Organization. They've lied to the planet. They've now closed down the opportunity to have any kind of serious investigation. It's a sad story that for over a year, the Western world was basically lied to by China and accepted it. China is responsible for the death of millions, for economic crisis across the planet, for disrupting the entire world system, and the Chinese ought to be held accountable.
Absolutely. But when that question got raised the other day at the White House, what are you going to do to China if you prove that they did it that way? We're not ready to discuss that. Let's wait for the 90-day report to come in. Buying time. Dancing till the music stops, and grab a chair. Coming up, some interesting news coming out, reference BLM and U.S. and Israel. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I didn't have time to get this story into news and commentary at the top of the hour, but I want to make sure you heard it. And that is, as you know, one of the Black Lives Matter co-founder, Patrice Couture, fully admits she's Marxist, Marxist trained, believes in Marxism, which basically is take the wealth and share it. But, of course, recently there have been a lot of questions about Black Lives Matter activists, and particularly at the top, and where the money's been going. And local chapters have been saying, where is all this money? $90-plus million gathered, and that's the only what they reported, and very little, if any, getting to the local chapters. And then word comes out that Patrice Couture had bought a $1.4 million compound in the L.A. area. Also, it was just one of four homes she owned, which included a Georgia ranch with an airplane hangar. And after the presidential election, as I say, local BLM activists were saying, where is the money? We're not getting any of it. You're not helping us out in the local communities. The news is that she has decided to resign because of the controversy. She's got her money. Good luck with the rest of you Marxists. See what you can do. Word coming out from the Times of Israel, Joe Biden ready to appoint a new U.S. ambassador to Israel. A guy that shared anti-Trump conspiracy theories on Twitter all the time, including that Trump wanted to go to war with Iran. His name is Thomas Nides. He had also been a supporter of Obama and Ben Rhodes and retweeted Ben Rhodes' claim in 2019 that Trump was trying to provoke Iran into a war. He also had even tweeted at one time a column from the Washington Post that criticized Biden for his habit of touching women. Of course, that was at the time that Klobuchar from his state was running against Biden. Now, I guess it's all okay. He was also chief of staff for U.S. Trade Representative Cantor in coming up with the North American Free Trade Agreement, now regarded as a deeply flawed agreement that cost us a lot of jobs. Now, the former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. told the Times of Israel that despite a somewhat critical portrayal of Nides, that he still views him as a friend of the Jewish state. Well, we're going to see but he's already made it clear by his past that he's more than willing to be supporting Iran and possibly PLO and Hamas. And what's he going to do about the effort to get arms to Israel? Will he begin to step up and try to put a stop to that? Again, serving as U.S. ambassador to Israel. And this cannot be overlooked. According to NBC News, and apparently other sources as well, the Israeli ambassador, if that's who's appointed, Tom Nides, he is in bed with CNN. I mean, he is in bed with CNN. You're not hearing me. He is in bed. Virginia Moseley, his wife, is senior vice president of news gathering at CNN. Isn't it such a nice thing to be on the left and you get all these cushy jobs and then you get a position in the White House like Ben Rhodes had? And his brother was heading up CBS News at the time and sharing information back and forth. Remember, Rhodes even at one point talked about that he would just go out and tell reporters anything and they'd just carry it and run with it. And he also knew that his brother at CBS would make sure the story got covered. So here's the new ambassador to Israel, married to the woman who's a senior VP of news gathering at CNN. Now, Joe Biden is insisting there's always been a wall between my official duties and relationships with my son and his business. We don't believe that. Do you think there's a wall, as it's sometimes referred to, a Chinese wall between the senior VP of news gathering at CNN and her husband if he becomes the ambassador to Israel? And for them, it's just routine business. Just routine. Just change the names. Coming up, Emily Kao is going to join us, law professor, about the right way to fight against racism. You want to hear her report. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around another 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website. Rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com. Cisco Kid was a friend of mine.
Cisco Kid was a friend of mine. He drink whiskey, poncho, drink the wine.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
My next guest, an attorney, law professor, 14 years defending religious freedom, previously taught international human rights law, Emily Kao from Heritage. Glad to have you on board again, Emily.
Thank you, Larry.
Let me begin with, so I can set the stage in the background for everyone, of your basic heritage.
Yes. My basic heritage?
Yes,
my title is Director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society. Our center works on life, marriage, and religious liberty.
And your basic ethnic heritage is what I meant.
Oh, yes. I'm Chinese American.
Chinese American. Okay. So when you speak about these things, you're speaking as an Asian American. So you're not just someone coming up with something. And the reason I wanted to make that very clear, because you did a great piece that appeared in Heritage, The Right Way to Fight Racism. And in that, you began to talk about, and again, folks, Emily Kao is also attorney law professor and 14 years defending religious freedom. She was looking at this law and said that members of Congress, including several Asian Americans, surely meant well when they drafted a bill against hate crimes committed against Asian Americans. But what's the problem with it?
Well, I think a lot of people think that the best way to fight racism is to have more racial categories. But that's actually a misguided way to fight racial prejudice. The reality is that there is racial prejudice in the world, but the way that we should fight it is through impartiality, treating people as individuals. And that's what our lawmakers should be trying to do. They should be trying to take out racial preferences. So one thing I point out in the article is that racial preferences are still practiced in college admissions all over the country, especially by some very elite universities like my alma mater, Harvard. Lawmakers should be focused on taking out those racial preferences rather than adding them in, as they did with the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act.
But also, you point out, in addition to how you think that didn't really, kind of a political, even a hollow political victory, you say it, rather than real progress or justice. But you also point out Senate Democrats defeated an amendment that would have prevented college admissions officers from using race to penalize Asian Americans, kind of what you were alluding to then.
That's exactly right. So what the lawmakers in Congress did was they tried to increase the prosecution of hate crimes. And hate crimes are classified by the person's ethnicity. So there's a greater penalty, more severe penalty, if a person is found guilty of committing a crime and their motive is racial hate. Of course, racial hate is a terrible thing. Racial disparity is horrible, and we should fight against it. But the right way to fight against racism is not by adding more racial preferences into the law. All people are inherently valuable and have human dignity, and so we should value all lives. That's why adding racial preferences into hate crimes law is not the right way to go, because it values some lives over others. The right way to go is through the path of impartiality and taking out racial preferences. And one place in the law where racial preferences still exist, a lot of people are really surprised to learn this, racial preferences still exist and they are legal in college admissions. And so there's a lawsuit pending right now before the Supreme Court, Supreme Court is deciding whether to take it up, from students who are protesting against Harvard using race as a factor in admissions.
And in fact, they were basically correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if I recall exactly, they were basically setting a higher standard or looking for a way to reduce the number of Asian students because they were outperforming others.
That's exactly right. So Harvard has basically set a ceiling on the number of Asian Americans who can be admitted. So the percentage of Asian Americans at Harvard has stayed the same for decades. And they have used a person's race as a way of weeding them out. And that's very unfortunate. They have consistently rated Asian Americans lower on categories like personality and leadership qualities. And they have been using race as a creating an obstacle to admissions by using a student's race. And that's discrimination. And we should all be against that, including Congress and including hopefully the Supreme Court will see it that way as well.
You're listening to Emily Kao from the Heritage Foundation, a attorney, law professor, 14 years defending religious freedom. And I want to read part of the article for the audience. You point out that, let me get the right part here. You said fighting racial discrimination with more racial discrimination doesn't unrig the system. To undo racial discrimination favoritism, we must increase impartiality. That means treat people as individuals, not members of a racial group. That might not be what critical race theory teaches, but it's a right idea. And then you point out how women and people of color were not among the draftees of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. Well, we know that's for a fact. And so within there, is there inalienable human rights that are not benefiting women and men of every color at the time they were drafting it and believing it? And where do we stand now with that?
I think the founders got it right when they talked about the equality of all people based on our inherent dignity and that we are all endowed by our Creator with inalienable human rights. It's a really revolutionary concept. When you look throughout the world and throughout history, America really is the first country that has been based upon the equality of all individuals and the idea that our human rights are inalienable. They're not a grant from the government.
But we're told all the time lately by the culture woke group that it's a systemic racism at every level and every operation. And I don't mean just against Asian Americans, obviously, about whatever group that feels that it's been a challenge, in particular, the black population.
So I think that those who ascribe to critical race theory have given up on the founding principles. They see America as systemically racist and a system to be dismantled. I see it differently. I think the founding principles were the right principles. I think we are always moving towards greater fulfillment of those principles. I think that's what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had in mind when he gave his speech in Washington about every person being judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And I think as Americans, we should continue to work towards the fulfillment of the promises that are in the Declaration of Independence and in Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech.
Now, some might say,
as individuals.
I'm sorry.
Sure, by treating people as individuals.
And I apologize for stepping on part of your thought, but I'm sitting here listening to you, and obviously you are, Harvard law, attorney, law professor. I mean, you know human rights law and all this stuff, and some might think, well, you're among the privileged. You don't really know what it's like to be an Asian American, that you've never had any slurs or attacks against you. That would be wrong, wouldn't it?
Well, that would be wrong. As I pointed out in the article, I have faced discrimination. People have asked me, where I come from. I mean, I was born in this country, but I'm always asked, where am I really from? I'm really from America. I've been told to go back to where I came from, and I was born in America. I recently, I talked in the article about a recent case of vandalism against, on my car. I didn't assume that that was a racist incident, that the person who did that was motivated by hatred towards Asian Americans. But right now, because critical race theory is so dominant in our public discourse, I think that narrative pushes people like me who are minorities to think that, everything that happens is based on racism. This idea of systemic racism. And I think that's a very dangerous path for Americans to go down. We shouldn't ascribe everything to racism when not everything is clearly related to racism.
But of course, there are those that, they capitalize on it. And when they do, and that's why I did ask that question in the beginning, that I want to make it clear to the public that, your basic line of heritage, and certainly you are an American, but your heritage is all part of our lives. We all have something in our past from immigrants from another country. But unless they're an American Indian, obviously. But the bottom line I want to get through and give you an opportunity to deal with is the fact that hashtag stop Asian attacks and all these things that come out, and then we are seeing the attacks on Jews in New York City, and they're told to hide their Judaism, their Star of David, and things of this nature. And I saw one retort from someone, I assume, of Asian descent, said, am I supposed to hide my eyes? I mean, where do we decide? First of all, you're not a victim, and you're making it clear you're not a victim, but the nation is just going about this the wrong way, or some are, I should say.
Well, in the article, I try to point out the right way to go about fighting racism, and that is treating people as individuals. And I mentioned several incidents in which people have, helped me. People have hired me. People have promoted me. People have mentored me. And I think it's because they saw me as an individual. They saw my individual strengths and weaknesses. They saw my individual abilities or talents. And I'm thankful to all of those people. And those were people of many different races. In fact, most of them probably were not Asian Americans who helped me. And when I, interview people or I hire people or I promote or mentor people at work, I try to do the same thing. I try to treat each person as an individual, not as a representative of their race. And I think that is a way.
And that's how we move forward. Emily, thank you very much for your time, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for making us rethink this. I do appreciate it. Emily Kael from the Heritage Foundation. Coming up, a former Korean American who's facing a death threat from North Korea. Stand by.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Larry Connors, USA.
The court has recognized that there is a danger to my life and to those around me if I leave this country. And quite frankly, they've told me that danger is here in the United States, and that danger exponentially increases if I leave the country. And the same Department of Justice that's told me that if I leave the country that I could be assassinated is the same Department of Justice that's trying to extradite me.
Doesn't make any sense, does it? Those are the words of Christopher Ahn. He served in the U.S. Marines as an officer. He's now 39 years of age. He was arrested in 2019 as a member of a group called Free North Korea. He was helping the North Korean ambassador, along with some others, in Spain to defect because the North Korean ambassador in Madrid wanted to defect. He was looking for a way to escape North Korea while he was in Spain serving as the ambassador. But apparently at the last minute, according to Christopher Ahn, he changed his mind, probably frightened or suddenly realized that I have too many people that would suffer. Who knows? Or maybe just decided just too scary, because he feared that they might hunt him down anyway. Well, the North Korean group, or I should say North Korea, claims that Christopher Ahn and his group broke their way into the embassy, broke their way in, tied up numerous personnel, beating several of the diplomats, and that's what they were doing, and they were telling that story to the Spanish authorities in Madrid. And the North Korean government wants Spain to have him extradited from the U.S. back to Madrid to stand trial on those charges. And no doubt then for North Korea to say, well, we need to try him in our court because he assaulted our people. You know, you have to know that's the ultimate game here, to get him in North Korea. And as you heard him say, the court that they are currently going through court battles to not be extradited to Spain and in turn probably turned over to North Korea, the courts have recognized his life is in jeopardy and is being threatened. And if he remains here, doesn't mean that they won't send someone to track him down anyway. But certainly if he goes back to Spain. And of course, you hear a story like this, and one of the questions comes to mind is to, Why did you get involved with this group anyway that was going either invited, as they say, we were invited in because the North Korean ambassador living in Spain wanted to defect. If you even did it under an invitation, why did you do so?
The whole reason why we went in there and the whole reason why I participated in this is because, you know, I wanted to help people. People wanted to be helped, and people wanted to choose a better life, and they didn't want to live under the regime of North Korea, and they wanted something better for their children. And I understood that, and I understand that. And what I was trying to do was trying to help these people. I mean, because at that point, they may be North Korean, But they're parents, and they love their children, and they've been fed lies their entire life. And they come to a Western country, and they realize that everything that they've been told are lies. And they have to make a decision on what it is that they want to do for their children.
That would be like any parent, wouldn't it? We are all alike. He also points out that, again, he's facing this extradition, and it might be carried out.
The U.S. government's trying to extradite me, and it's very disappointing that that's what they want to do, quite frankly. But I also have trust in the American government. I have trust in the American system. And quite frankly, I have trust in the American people. You know, all I can do is have faith in the fact that in the end, logic and common sense and people who care about what's going on will prevail. What really kind of wins the day is morals and belief in our system of government and our system of laws. And although I'm in this unfortunate situation, I still have faith in America and in the American people.
And again, he served as an officer in the U.S. Marines. He will not discuss really what happened inside the embassy, and I think that's probably because it might put other people in jeopardy. But he says, we didn't break in. We were invited, and the North Korean was going to defect and changed his mind. He's been told that the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-il, might have a Korean hit squad looking for him, kidnap him if he's extradited, or even if he's not, and execute him in public. I can't understand why our government's even considering such an extradition. Remember those on Memorial Day, will you? And remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.